The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." The news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Why did Jesus and his followers, why did they do this? Where did they get this idea? Where did they get this idea to live this way? Well, because in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And God said, "Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water." So God made the expanse and separated the water from the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky. And God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place and let dry ground appear." And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds." And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth." And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the water teem with living creatures, and let the birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky." So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing with which the water teems, according to their kinds, every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on the earth." And God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. And by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he ceased from all his work. There's a certain pace and a cadence and a rhythm to this poem and this song that tells how God brings things into being. There's a meter to it that has a definite rhythm to it each day. But the telling of it isn't the only rhythmic part. It appears that what God creates is in itself a set of rhythms. So this is a rhythmic telling of the rhythms of God. And then it comes to a point where it seems like, okay, he's done and that's it. But for the Jewish mind, the scriptures continue to tell that it's the 7-day cycle that repeats. Though a week later was not called the 14th day, it was called the 7th day again. There's this rhythm where you don't just keep counting days upward. You repeat the 7-day cycle rhythmically. It's predetermined, it's predictable, and it's how the universe works. Rhythms within rhythms. That's how it works. Now, the question about God ceasing and resting, is God tired? No, he's not tired. God works really hard, but he knows when to stop. He knows when to shut it down. He knows when to be finished. God, there's so much more you could do. You have limitless power, limitless creativity. There's so much more to do. Yeah, I know. But I cease. I stop. I'm done. I know when to quit. That really messes with people's heads when you just, in the chaos and in the frenetic pace that we've all somehow agreed to in our life, if you're the one that just stops, you just check out, you unplug and you shut it down. Everybody else is like, what's going on? This is the strangest thing in the world. What are you doing? You could be doing something more productive right now. You are wasting time. You could be doing something else. There's more to do. There's energy to be spent. There's noise to make. What are you doing? In our busy culture, in our noisy culture, in our culture that's constantly moving, we've lost a little chunk of reality. We've lost our perception on what God has done. In our busy culture, we dread quiet. We dread unplugging and checking out. The space in between the noises, we call that dead air. Something has gone wrong. We forgot, though, that the universe works in rhythm. That God works in rhythm, where he works very hard and then he rests very hard. We've forgotten that the whole universe, the outer world and our inner world, works this way. Light and dark, day and night, cold and heat, planetary orbits, constellations, moon phases, tides, seasons, mating, nesting, birth, growth, harvest, flood, drought, sleep, awake, bodily rhythms such as your daily fluctuations in temperature and blood pressure, menstruation, breathing, eating, drinking. Any change generally to these rhythms can be a really bad thing. And so people who worship God aren't just people who believe a certain set of ideas. People who worship God are people who are trying to tap into this reality that God has set up, that live with rhythm in their day and in their week and in their month and in their year. They live by these rhythms because that's real life. That's how things work. It's not just a religious idea. It's a way of celebrating the one life that God has given us. But we know when it's time to work, man, we work hard. We work creatively. We work to make this world more and more beautiful and better. But man, when it's time to rest, you can't find us. And we're not supposed to be militant about this. We're not supposed to be legalistic about this. We're supposed to celebrate that we simply know when to shut it down. There's more to do. There's more energy to be spent. There's more. I know, but it's time to shut it down. This is how reality works. Now, it's long been known that followers of God, those who would pursue Christ, they live by these daily and weekly rhythms. It's a known thing, and it has been for a long, long time, that one of the major markers of the identity of faithful people would be these rhythms in their life. In the midst of their work, in the midst of their life, they live by these rhythms. In 1793, in the French Revolution, there was a couple things going on. One of the major things going on in the French Revolution was this idea that they were trying to install the age of reason. It was time to be rational people. It was time to admit that humans were the center of the universe. Let's use our brains and be rational. And so obviously one of the components of this was we have to do away with religious traditions and these archaic ideas about how the world works. And so the week was one of the first things to go, because as far as anybody could tell, Jews made that up thousands of years ago, and it must go. And so what the French decided was that let's use the decimal principle. The seven-day thing just has no meaning. It's irrational. So what they decided was they would use the decimal system and use tens. So the new work week was now 10 days. Each day was divided up into 10 hours. Each hour was divided up into 100 minutes, and each minute was divided up into 100 decimal seconds. That made way more sense. That was way easier to track. It was more rational. So every 10 days you may rest, but you need to produce and you need to achieve humanity and you need to push this thing forward and say goodbye to the antiquated way. It didn't last 15 years. Totally broke down. More rational or not, it wouldn't work. It was an absolute disaster, and the French pulled the plug on it. Said, let's do toast. No idea where that came from. And if you're French, I'm sorry. You're worth more to me than your toast. So 140 years later, communists try the same thing. During the Russian Revolution, Stalin said in 1929, let's get rid of Christians and the whole religious system and the antiquated rhythms that they live by. Let's do away with their lifestyle. And so what they did is they instituted a five-day continuous week where at any given moment, 80% of the population in Russia was working and 20% were resting. I don't know how that worked within a single home, but 80% working, 20% resting in a circulation, in a rotation. 11 years. Absolute, utter failure. Nothing good about it happened. And Stalin, at the end of it, gave the people back their seven-day rhythm. See, it can be more rational. It might make more sense on paper. You might be able to justify living by a different system, but it doesn't work. You don't change God's song. You can't do it. So it's assumed that if people are going to take God, the God of creation, seriously, as created beings, that you'll live in these rhythms daily and weekly and monthly and yearly, because this is not just a religious idea. This is how the universe operates. It operates in rhythm. So if you're going to take him seriously, you'll live by him. And that you'll shun anything that tries to get you to live by a principle of frantic desire to increase and produce more and more and more, because your ego gets tied to that. And then suddenly you are what you produce. And you're worth the quality of what you produce. Not what God intended. Not what he intended. Now, many people look at this and they say, you don't understand, though. I got tons of energy. I'm in the prime of my life. I'm not tired. We don't just rest when we're tired. Resting, stopping, and ceasing is a way of saying, I am not what I produce. God tells me who I am. And nothing and no one else do. And so I work hard when I'm working, but I stop and I shut it down. You don't just rest when you're tired. But there's more work to do. There's so much more work to do. There is always, always, always going to be more work to do. Always. You need to understand that these principles and these writings and these scriptures and these ideas that God has transmitted to people through the years, these originally came through the lens of Israelites who were former slaves in Egypt. Their identity was slave. What they produced was bricks for Pharaoh. And they're called out and then given the law that you will live by these rhythms, because the way you were living wasn't living at all. It's something to celebrate, to live by these daily and weekly rhythms. It's a way of saying very boldly, very subversively, I'm not a slave. I'm free. I work hard, but that's not who I am. God tells me who I am, and I celebrate that. And so, really, if you think about it, I think this is great marketing. I mean, if you're trying to get people to come to your faith, you know, I mean, hey, guys, there's a surgical procedure that you've got to undergo to be one of us, you know, to be a Jew, but you get a holiday every week. The Greeks made fun of the Jews. They made fun. They said that they were lazy people. Who do they think they are? A holiday every week. That's something for royalty. Who do you think you are? Well, not slaves. We are people trying to live the life God intended, to live in His ways and in His rhythms. So that affects things that we do, but it certainly also affects things that we do not do. I find that many people who do not live by these rhythms, who won't live by these rhythms in their day, in their week, who won't shut down, they won't do it, or they just haven't. I find that many of them, not all of them, but many of them, they live in a world where that's applauded, where their pace is applauded. Man, she's really driven. She's really going to make... He works like 60-plus hours a week, every week. Man, he is so ambitious at this rate. You know, we're all going to be voting for him someday. And I get hard work, and I know that there are... I have those weeks where you've got to put in extra time, and I think that's a good thing. But I see very often, not all the time, but very often in people who live this way, this is people know them as living this way. It's applauded as something strong, and it's not. It's weak. For many people, what looks like strength is weakness. It's fear. It's addiction. Constantly working so as to not disappoint or let down an employer or investors or a client or co-workers. Constantly working so as to not fall short of the title or the amount of income that their education has produced. It's constantly trying to avoid disappointing or falling short of something. It's weakness so many times. There are times to really, really put in extra time. And we know that. But so often I see that the thing being applauded as strength isn't strength. It's weakness. We have to ask ourselves, does my pace denote strength? Or am I running from something? Am I trying to avoid something? Am I trying to avoid a certain perception? It'll sneak up on you too. If any of you own a business or have owned a business, that thing will own you if you let it, won't it? It'll swallow you up. It becomes who you are. And you know people like this, people maybe in your own family who say, I've got to put in the time for these next few years, or I've got to, you know what? I'll rest when I retire. I'll rest when I die. Oh, because you're living now. Look at this list of things that stress either causes or is exacerbated by stress that's not dealt with. Look at this list. If you were God, and you knew this, what would you tell you? How would you define make a living? If you were God and you knew what will happen to people if they don't live in rhythm, and this is what we know. If you were God and you knew that when people don't live in rhythms, when they're not intentional about shutting it down and not letting what they produce be what determines their identity, what would you say to you? It's not strength to not take a break. It's not strength to always be available at work. It's not strength to not be able to shut it down. It's not. It's so often weakness, and it's a slow death. You need to understand, too, even if you love your job, you might feel exempt. Yeah, but I love my job. But it's not who you are. If you can't shut it down, or ask to shut it down. In the book of Mark, he uses the word immediately almost more than any other word. If you've ever read through Mark, it's immediately, immediately, immediately. There's a pace that Mark kind of lays out for what's going on around Jesus' life and around his followers and as news starts to spread. And so I want you to listen to Mark chapter 1, starting at verse 21, if you want to follow along in the scriptures. Mark chapter 1, verse 21. They, Jesus and his disciples, went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then, a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an evil spirit cried out, What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Be quiet, said Jesus sternly. Come out of him. The evil spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. The people were all so amazed that they asked each other, What is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to evil spirits and they obey him. News about him spread quickly all over the whole region of Galilee. Jesus has authority. Jesus has this reputation. People know who this Jesus is. He seems to have some connection with the spiritual realm. Who is this Jesus? Tell your friends, let's get to this Jesus. As soon as, verse 29, they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever. Now there's a mother-in-law involved. And they told Jesus about her. So he went to her, took her hand and helped her up. The fever left her and she began to wait on them because they're still working. They're still producing. That evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon possessed. The whole town gathered at the door and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he wouldn't let the demons speak because they knew who he was. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, Everyone is looking for you. Apparently, Jesus the night before didn't get his work done. There was still work to be done, but he wakes up and he doesn't go right back to it. Jesus goes and he hides. Jesus, Savior of the world, you got 3 years here. There are things waiting to happen that only you can make happen. Jesus, there are things waiting for your authority and your power and your know-how and your reputation. Where have you been? Everybody's looking for you. Jesus, we are waiting for you to come back because there are things that have to have your signature. Jesus, there's paperwork that you have got to get done for us. Jesus, who's going to pick them up at practice? Jesus, don't you know you have a meeting in 2 hours? Jesus, don't you know that the budget is due? Jesus, do you realize taxes are due in a matter of weeks? Everybody's looking for you, Jesus. Where are you? I know. I know all of that. You can almost hear Jesus saying. That's exactly why I'm doing this. That's exactly why I shut it down. I know all of that. That's why I shut it down. And I'm just going to simply be. I'm going to hide and I'm going to pray. Because there's things that Jesus does that we know about. That's part of his identity. But what's interesting is thousands of years later, we're also talking about what he didn't do. And that's part of his identity as well. He hid. They couldn't find him. He just went to be. Now, I'm not presenting this necessarily as a standard for all of us, but we recognize this as a staff at Crosspoint. We try to emulate the patterns and the rhythms of Jesus. And Monday, like for many of you, is our busiest day. We're kind of coming off the weekend. We're planning for the rest of the week. And so Monday can be pretty hectic and pretty full. And so we have intentionally defied the calendar. And on Monday afternoons, we shut it down for an hour or more. We shut down being pastors, we shut down producing, and we just go be. We be with God. We go. We read. We go do nothing. I typically end up in the woods back here. We just be. Just breathe. And we produce not a thing. On Fridays, I am Steve. Husband, father, friend. But not a pastor. I fight the urge to look at email, to answer the phone, and I have caller ID, so I know what calls to answer for the most part. You can't get to me, and I fight for that day because I'm just with my kids and my wife, and we're just enjoying our life together, and unless you're on fire, you can't get to me. And even then, I'm going to make sure your head catches before I'll address it. I fight the urge each morning to wake up and start producing. And so I get up about 5:30 and I read and I pray and I run and I don't let myself wake up and start being what I make. For me specifically, I know there's a difference between knowing about God and teaching about God and planning and doing ministry for God and actually knowing Him. And I fight the urge to let those two worlds collide. Again, I'm not setting myself up as a standard for you, but many of you, you're grasping at straws. Well, what do I do? These are some of the really simple things that I certainly haven't mastered, but that are present in my life and in our life. I fight the urge to let my identity be comprised of what I've achieved or what I need to achieve. So Jesus didn't just have the supernatural thing that he had in his life that couldn't be emulated. He shut it down. He shut it down and went to hang out with God and his friends. He worked hard as though working for and with the Father. And then he rested hard with and for the Father. So, Jesus, if you just look at it in today's context, as busy and as important as Jesus was, had these moments very rhythmically that everybody knew about. The Gospels use the term, as was his custom, quite a few times. Jesus, he'd turn off his cell phone and shut down the laptop and not look at email, and he'd stop clipping coupons, and he would stop worrying about what wasn't happening or who might be disappointed, and he shut it down to simply be, to hang out with friends, to hang out with God, and to not let his identity merely be attached to what he did. Because here we are talking about what he didn't do, and it's all because this is how God intended life to work. So here's the rub. Nothing I just said matters. If you don't allow this to be part of how you live, if you don't look for ways to shut it down in your daily and weekly life, nothing I said is going to make it happen. You've got to just simply look for it, claim it, and fight for it. We call them disciplines at first, and then they become a way of life. So for you, it could be something as simple as putting a candle on your desk at work. And you've got these preset times where you light the candle, and that's the moment where you check out, you mentally detach yourself from what you produce, and you say, right now, I just want to acknowledge that you're the king of the universe, and I'm not, and I am not what I'm producing here. And God, will you fill me up, and will you tell me who I am? Maybe it's 15 minutes for your lunch break that you just check out and you shut it down. Maybe that's what it looks like. Maybe you're able to do that more often in your day, but 15 minutes that you would not work and eat at the same time. It's hard to be thankful for what you're eating when you don't even taste it because you're working right through it. 15 minutes, can you fight for that as a way of saying, this isn't who I am. God, you tell me who I am. Maybe you've got group members, you're in a life group, or you've just got people that you do life with, and some of the default questions are, hey, how's business? How are sales? How's this? Would you maybe ask them to ask you, how's your rhythm? Are you resting? Maybe you need to force yourself to leave at a certain time. This one, I get hung up on this one a lot. That you have to have a certain time that you leave the office. Because if you get up to the last 5 minutes and you're like, you know, if I answer that call or send one more email, I can get just a little bit more done. And then it tends to just go over. And so just no, I'm done. I cease right here. This is the moment that I am finished. You just need to set that time. When in the week do you not answer work phone calls and email and you can't be reached? Some of you are like, you don't understand. You know, my employer requires that of me. Maybe it's time to sit down and say, look, if you want me whole the other days, I'm going to need this day. Those are generalities. It's going to look different for each of us. But where are you making that time? It won't just happen. Where in your life and how important you are, do you go hide and people say, where have you been? Just breathing. Just enjoying life. I'm going to give you just a couple moments. And in this setting, it can be awkward. Feels like something's supposed to be happening, but we're going to be quiet for just a moment, and then we're going to listen to a song. I just want you for the next few minutes just to quiet yourself, and that voice in your head that says, "Well, how much more?" I get it too, but just tell it to go away for a second, and just be.